Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Kevin Remde and Brad Anderson wrap up their three-part What's New in 2012 R2 series, and in today's episode, they discuss how you can better enable modern business applications in your IT environment with the Windows Azure Pack. Tune in as they go in detail about how IT pros will be able to impact their organization's cloud strategy as they highlight the new powerful features and flexible and dynamic cloud functionality found in the next wave of Microsoft Server and System Center products. Kevin, the mic is yours.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our last of our very special three-part series of conversations entitled What's New in 2012 R2, where we discuss the exciting new Cloud OS vision in the next wave of Microsoft Server and System Center products with Microsoft Corporate Vice President Brad Anderson. My name is Kevin Remde, and I'm a Senior Technology Evangelist on the U.S. Developer and Platform Evangelism team at Microsoft, and I'm your TechNet Radio host today. As mentioned, my special guest is Mr. Brad Anderson. Welcome, Brad. Good to see you again.
Hey, Kevin. You know, Mr. Brad Anderson sounds so so formal.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, again, you're a corporate VP, so I'll just call you Brad from now on. How about that?
That'll work. That sounds
great. You can call me Kevin. So we've been doing this series. This is our third part. And, of course, this is covering the topics that you've been covering in your In the Cloud blog. Those topics, really the three parts that the series is relating to, had to do a lot with, of course, the improvements in Server 2012 and R2, both of Server and System Center. And those three topic areas really covered people-centric IT was part one. We talked about transforming the data center last time. And then today we're going to talk about enabling modern business applications. Now, I got to ask you, what do you mean by a modern application? And what does it mean to enable them?
You know, one of the things that cloud computing has brought is it's brought the ability for an application to be built in a way where the application is just far more intelligent than it's been in the past. The application understands things like when it should scale up, when it should scale down, and it has that kind of intelligence built into it, where if you compare that to how many applications were built in the past, they just didn't have that kind of intelligence and knowledge built into it. So we would build, you know, kind of IT pro policies around the application that would give you the high availability, that would give you the disaster recovery capabilities, and would also give you that, you know, when you'd build an IT policy that said, when I get from my reporting tools that an application is running at 70 or 80% utilization, and often it wasn't even the app, it's usually the operating system, go ahead and do something to add some capacity. So when I think about modern business applications, I really think about the architecture that the cloud now enables, and building these cloud-aware apps or these cloud-ready apps that just are far more intelligent in terms of how they should operate, how they should run, and are self-regulating as opposed to IT having to build that around, like it's happened for the last 20 or 30 years.
Okay, so it has to do with architecting solid solutions, robust solutions, architecting applications in ways that that span different locations, different clouds, different servers, certainly. But that all seems kind of like a discussion for software architects and maybe for development organizations. So why is it important for IT professionals, and why is it important for my IT organization to understand this?
Yeah, you know, it's really important, I think, for the IT professionals around the world who are going to be supporting these applications to really understand the details about how the applications are actually written and architected. And I guess a lot of that view and a lot of that belief just comes from, if you understand the thing that you are supporting, in this case we're talking about applications, you could extend that analogy to just about anything in life. If you deeply understand that thing that you are trying to enable and support operate, the more knowledge you have about it, the better equipped you are going to be to make sure that the infrastructure that gets built and all of the policies that get built are correct and are accurate and are appropriate and are actually optimized for the application. You know, I've always been this big believer that knowledge is empowering, knowledge is king, and I believe that knowledge of how applications are architected empowers IT professionals around the world to do a better job of deploying, operating, updating, securing, you know, all those types of things that we are expected to do as IT professionals. You're better at that if you understand the architecture of the application. Now, that's kind of a tactical reason, if you will, in terms of IT professionals and how this applies to their careers. But I also think there's a very, very important strategic reason that IT professionals should really spend the time to understand these architectures of these new modern applications. And that comes from the fact that if your organization is not already in discussions about what the cloud vision is going to be and about what your cloud, who your cloud partners are going to be, how you're going to use the cloud, where you're going to use the cloud, if your organization is not already in those discussions, it's soon going to be. And coming to the table, into the conversation equipped with the knowledge about how the applications are built and architected is going to allow you to be a much more effective participant in those conversations. And so from an IT perspective, rather than taking a look at cloud computing, whether that's, you know, private, service provider, or public, and feeling that, you know, things may be out of your control, I think understanding the cloud application architecture is going to enable you to actually be one of the leaders, one of the thought leaders in the organization in terms of contributing and defining what your cloud strategy would be. And let me give you one specific example. There's not a single customer that I've spoken to whose, you know, first or second largest concern with respect to the cloud is the concern about being locked in. No one wants to be locked in. You know, the fact is that most organizations may never move an application from one cloud to another, but everyone wants the security and the insurance that if for whatever reason you have to do that, that you can, without having to rewrite out the application, without having to rewrite or update the tools and processes and technology that you use as an IT professional. So I think going into the conversation, understanding who the cloud providers are and what kind of assurance you're getting from those cloud providers to be able to build once, build, you know, from a developer perspective, build the policies, the run books, the automation, the monitoring rules from an IT pro perspective, build those once and then deploy the application in any cloud, in the cloud that meets the best news for you, or it makes the most sense for you. That has to be one of the core conversations that has to happen. And so I think coming in, deeply understanding the architecture of the application, deeply understand each cloud vendor's perspective and the technology about enabling mobility of VMs and enabling mobility of applications across private service provider and public clouds, I think that knowledge and experience and expertise makes the IT professionals who spend the time to invest in that a critical asset in their organization.
Definitely. Those applications, these modern applications, as we're calling them, that live wherever I want them to live, whatever cloud it happens to be, seems to be the big selling point when you talk about the cloud technologies. And I know we've talked about this earlier in an earlier episode, but let's talk about the Windows Azure Pack. Yeah. Why is the ability to run an Azure-like private cloud in my own data center going to be important?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different aspects of this one. So following along the lines of what we were just talking about, the Windows Azure Pack literally brings Azure capabilities and enables them to be deployed on top of Windows Server and System Center. Okay, now that's kind of a technical explanation. From a scenario or from a value perspective, what that means is you can build an application on these modern architectures and you can deploy it in any cloud, from any Microsoft cloud, because the Windows Azure Pack takes those capabilities in Azure and brings them into your private cloud and brings them into a service provider cloud, so that promise of write once from a developer, configure and write your policies once from an IT pro perspective and run in any cloud, that the Windows Azure Pack is one of the foundational pieces in making that happen. So that's the first piece. You know, so that is really about friction-free movement of applications across clouds with a no lock-in model. And I'll tell you, the thing that we see in a very, very common way is organizations will start out from a dev test perspective in the public cloud. And so the dev and test organization will take advantage of the public cloud to build out the application, but then they often want to deploy it in a private cloud. But with the Windows Azure Pack, you know, developers can go build that modern application, they can get it up and running, test it, go through the entire life cycle of getting it built inside of Azure, but then deploy it in the private cloud without having to modify anything. Okay, so again, that's the first piece. The second piece then comes down to the fact that the Windows Azure Pack, in delivering that capability from Azure, you are getting incredibly powerful, battle-hardened, battle-tested capabilities that we have been running in Azure, running in your data center. And so it makes the data center more efficient. It makes it more reliable, more available. You know, I like to talk about this concept that I call SOAR, okay, S-O-A-R. And one of the things that I talk a lot with our development teams is everything that we build needs to SOAR. And SOAR has four attributes to it. It has to be scalable, it has to be operable, it has to be highly available, and it has to be reliable. And one of the great things that we get from Windows Azure is we get the ability to quickly develop something, put it into Azure, and run it at incredible scale. I mean, incredible scale across hundreds of thousands of servers worldwide. Battle harden that, prove it out, and then deliver it on top of Windows Server and System Center for you to use in your data centers. And boy, when you get it, it is ready to go. It's not a V1. It has been battle hardened. So that's the second reason why I think the Windows Azure Pack is so critical.
Definitely, definitely. And it's also very encouraging that you have the ability then, as you say, to use and actually install the technologies that Microsoft has grown and improved and developed in a global scale. We can actually have that in the products we buy today from Microsoft. And this flexibility that you talked about with regard to these applications living anywhere. I know there has to be some kind of a mechanism in place to make communications happen between the applications or even between different components of the applications. So, it's certainly network is available to us, whether we're in Windows Azure or a hosting provider or our own data center, certainly, and that flexibility is there. But beyond a secured VPN tunnel, are there any other mechanisms that we could take advantage of and support with regard to that kind of communication?
One of the first things that we built into Azure, and this is going back into 2009, 2010, that time frame, was something that we call Service Bus. And think about Service Bus as basically this communication platform that allows you to build an application, make calls to Service Bus, and then Service Bus allows you to have those tiers of the your tiers of your application sitting in different data centers, in different clouds. It allows you to have, for example, the isolation and the separation of the different aspects of the application. And in the blog, I go through a lot of detail and talk about kind of a point of sale scenario where you could have your website that is your point of sale interface, and so you're collecting the purchases from your users. Those get stored into Service Bus, and then the actual databases and the processes on the back end that are picking up those orders, putting them in a ship and getting them boxed out and sent out around the world can make the call to Service Bus, bring out those, it's the queuing mechanism, bring that out, and you can have multiple tiers on that back end, all just going in and grabbing the requests and the needs out of Service Bus and then shipping around the world. So following on that example a little bit more, you could have a scenario where you're running a sale, it's Black Friday, and your back end capacity to actually keep up real time with all the requests coming in from the website can't keep up with the demand. But with Service Bus, they get queued, and then as demand is freed up on the back end, they all get serviced. And so it gives you that ability to isolate or have a separation between the different aspects of your application from the front end all the way to the back end. But Service Bus is one of the earliest pieces that we built inside of Windows Azure. And in the first iteration of the Windows Azure Pack, we actually shipped Service Bus as a part of that for organizations to run in their data center. And with the new Azure Pack that's coming out with Windows Server 2012 R2 and System Center 2012 R2, there's a significant update there to Service Bus. And what that allows developers to do now is developers can build an application, and if for whatever reason all aspects of that application need to run on premises, it could be data sovereignty, it could be compliance, there's a host of reasons why, you can take advantage of Service Bus and have all of that running in your data center. Boy, and then you know what? If you want to then move that to the public cloud, you want to move that to Azure, it's the same bits running in Azure that are running now on Windows Server and System Center with Service Bus, so you can move your application to the public cloud without having to rewrite it. Service Bus, just a wonderful set of capabilities, and a great example of where we built something, we proved it inside of Windows Azure, running it at the incredible scale that we run Azure at, and then have now delivered it on top of Windows Server and System Center for organizations to use in their data centers.
Sounds great. So, and this all comes from, again, that history of building a really great product and improving upon it and then taking advantage of it and giving us the advantage in our own data centers for that. While we're on the subject of history of Azure, this is even beyond or before Windows Azure supported running virtual machines directly
from
the infrastructure services. Now we have virtual networking, we have virtual machines, we have true infrastructure as a service. Before that, we had something called Platform as a Service, or PaaS. And for those folks who aren't familiar with Platform as a Service, could you please describe it?
Yeah, so Platform as a Service really is one kind of way that you can use the cloud. You can build an application looking at the cloud as a platform being delivered to you as a service. And I think some of the great things about that is you as a developer can, and as an IT professional, can entirely focus on the application, and you don't have to worry at all about what's happening in the operating system. So you can take advantage of the APIs that are presented there that allow you to build that application that is going to be available globally. It's going to be available 24/7. It's going to be highly available. It's going to be highly reliable. It's going to be highly scalable, because the APIs that are presented there that take advantage of that platform as a service are the APIs that allow you to build that application in a way that delivers all those abilities, right? And in the past, if you think about it for a minute, if an organization wanted to build out an application and the infrastructure to deliver an application globally, available 24/7, that was highly available, when I say highly available, you're talking about, you know, 4 nines, 5 nines of availability, there were literally only a few organizations in the world that would be able to afford the kind of investment that was required to do that. So now with the cloud and with Platform as a Service, any organization in the world, no matter how small you are, no matter how large you are, can build out that world-class application that is available everywhere, always on, with the 4 and 5 nines of availability. And that really is the promise that PaaS brings. And so I like to talk about with Azure, you know, we've brought that high availability, that always on kind of infrastructure to the masses. And so when I think about PaaS, that's what I think about. You know, when you click down a little bit, there's some interesting things on that. Now, I'll just give you one kind of example of where PaaS differs from IaaS. In IaaS, you know, you're managing a VM, and that VM has got an application in it. And so things like patching the operating system, patching the VM, making sure that all aspects of that VM, that the application and the operating system are secured, are updated, is the responsibility of the organization. In a PaaS model, you never have to worry about the operating system, because all the PaaS APIs ride above that. And so things like, you know, patching, updating, Microsoft takes care of all that. And so, for example, on Patch Tuesday, when we go out and update all of the servers that are running the PaaS infrastructure for Azure, you know, we are able to just basically lift up the applications, move it over to another server, update the server, patch it, reboot it, bring it back up. But all that is built natively into Azure, and organizations never have to worry about the operating system any longer. They can focus on the application. And that's kind of a practical example of how PaaS delivers significant value and simplifies the world for developers, especially in a DevOps world. We just don't want to have to worry about the operating system.
Yeah, exactly. Not worrying about the operating system, not worrying about load balancing for when you need to roll out new instances of a particular role for the sake of scale. I mean, it just scales flexibly, and you simply pay for what you use. I think it's great.
Yeah, and good point. Yeah, the pay for use is a big part of that as well.
So on a practical, functional level, how is Microsoft's PaaS solution different from that of our competitors?
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing that I think about when I think about our PaaS solution is we're delivering PaaS solutions that can run in our data centers, can run in our customers' data centers, and can run in our partners' data centers, who are our service providers. And that no lock-in model is what every organization in the world desires and what they want. And so when I think about it, it's just that consistency across clouds, friction-free movement of my application across clouds, and the ability to build in one place, deploy in another, deploy in one data center one day, and maybe next year I've got to go move it. But that friction-free movement, the friction-free experience for IT professionals and for developers to build, deploy, and operate applications, that's what I think differentiates Microsoft more than anything else in this world.
And is Platform as a Service just one option? I mean, by that I mean, if I choose to go Platform as a Service as opposed to Infrastructure as a Service, where I'm managing virtual machines, and whether they be in
written that way, can tiers use different kind of
I was going to say, because you can actually mix and match them. Does my entire application be built in one or the other, or can they actually communicate with one another?
Yeah, it's a great question, and you can definitely mix and match. One of the things that we see quite often is organizations using the public cloud like Azure to do things like build the front end of their application or service. But then they have, for example, the data tier reside back in the walls of their own data center. And there's a lot of different examples on there. You can take a look at examples like, you know, EasyJet and others we've talked about, you know, publicly about how they've gone out and they built the front end of a particular part of an application and used the PaaS capabilities to build that out and have all that wonderful automated scalability, scale up, scale down, the ability to have the application be able to recover from issues. It's just that intelligence, but have the data still residing in their data centers. That is a very, very common scenario that we see. So it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You can actually take one tier or multiple tiers of an application or service and have that run in a PaaS model and others run in an IaaS model and even in a different data center.
Okay, great. And you mentioned case studies. So I should probably, it's a good opportunity to plug the case study site if anyone wants to find out more about what these companies are doing with our products and with things such as Windows Azure and Platform as a Service. Simply go to Microsoft.com/case studies and you can search for any number of different products and technology areas. So really good resource for you. So what about this idea that we hinted at earlier, and that has to do with consistency? If I build my application in Platform as a Service or with Platform as a Service components, and you know, am I locked into then running those on Windows Azure in the public cloud, or do I have now the option, because we talked about the Azure Pack, can we actually use a Platform as a Service in-house?
Yeah, and that promise of consistency, what that allows is that friction-free movement we've been talking about. And again, it is, I was actually on a conference call with one of the largest banks in the world this last week, and we were talking about their cloud strategy, and they were kind of walking me through the things that they were thinking about, the things that they were concerned about. And when we got to public cloud, you know, this senior leader that I was talking to made the statement that his biggest concern about public cloud is he felt that he would be locked in. Once you make a decision, you are locked in, because you know, if you're going to really take advantage of the public cloud capabilities that are offered by the various vendors, the belief is that if you take advantage of those APIs, you're going to be locked in. And I'll tell you, you know, as I think about our biggest competitor in the public cloud, you are.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, that's not without merit. That's a true statement.
And I said, well, hey, let's talk to you about this Windows Azure Pack. And we talked about how the Windows Azure Pack literally takes the capabilities from Azure that enable us to do things like develop PaaS applications, or, you know, we really like to call them these modern applications. You can build them, and you have the complete flexibility and choice to run those applications where it makes the most sense. You are not locked in. And so we talk a lot about consistency, but the real promise that consistency delivers is that friction-free movement, build once, deploy once, and have that consistency for both IT professionals and developers. I don't know why this came to my mind right now, but concept of battle hardening different aspects of what we do in our private cloud and the clouds that we deliver for service providers in Azure, and then bringing that, you know, battle hardening in Azure and then bringing it on premise. I don't know why this came to mind, but I got thinking here. You know, one of my favorite authors is Malcolm Gladwell, and I love his book Outliers. And Outliers has a bunch of different stories in there. But one of his premises is that there's a certain amount of time that you just have to put in if you're going to be a professional or proficient in something. He talks about, you know, Michael Jackson and Michael Jordan and different athletes. And, you know, he makes this statement that it's about 10,000 hours someone has to put in order to be proficient. He actually goes to example of Bill Gates going in and, you know, and working on the computer when he was a teenager. In Azure, you know, we put in a heck of a lot more than 10,000 hours, but, you know, taking that kind of line of thinking, this maybe can help everyone understand just how important this is. When you get capabilities from Microsoft for your private cloud and for your service provider cloud, and especially things like the Windows Azure Pack, we have spent the time to prove that out, to work out the kinks, to work out any issues. So when you get it, we've already been running it inside of Azure for 1, 2, or 3 years. And just like, you know, the concept in Outliers, it is proficient. It is ready to go. It is ready to put your most mission-critical applications on. And that's just one of those pieces that you just cannot head fake your way into. You're either in the public cloud or you're not, and you're either consistent or you're not. And I think Microsoft's view here and our proven execution in Azure and what we're doing with the consistency across the clouds is a very unique offering on the market and the real thing that customers are asking for.
Absolutely. Having that consistency to be able to take advantage of the different components running either in the public cloud or with the Windows Azure pack running in my own data center, and trusting that it has been thoroughly tested, much more than 10,000 hours. And I know we already covered it in part two of the series, but why don't you remind our viewers exactly what they need to have from Microsoft in order to enable platform as a service on the Windows Azure pack in our own data center?
Yeah, so the way we think about this is we're bringing everything to market on in a consistent way. We actually have common milestones from a planning, from a preview, from a release. So if you want to have the Azure capabilities in your cloud, that's Windows Server 2012 R2, System Center 2012 R2, and the Windows Azure Pack. And the Windows Azure Pack is a free download. You can download that off the web, and then it just deploys on top of Windows Server and on top of System Center. And then a lot of the work that we've done inside of System Center, for example, uses the console framework that was built for Azure, which is also brought down on-premises inside of the Windows Azure Pack, as the self-service experience that you can use to give your tenants or the customers of your private or your hosted cloud. You can use the exact same experience that we use in Azure, and that's a part of that.
All right. So sounds pretty good. And if you have experience already with Windows Server, with running virtualization and managing it through System Center, then certainly adding this onto that doesn't sound like it'd be too difficult. So, but something to definitely look into. Well, Brad, thank you so much. That's all the time we have for doing this today. But before we close, where can we send our viewers for more information?
Yeah, you know, if you look at we call the blog in the cloud, so you can do aka.mswac in the cloud. You can also do aka.mswac what's new in 2012 R2. I was kind of joke about that because it rhymes too much, you know. But yeah, go to those two places. We have just been floored and amazed at how many people are coming in and doing this and the feedback that we're getting on us. We're really, really happy.
Well, and you should be, and you should be proud of the content too. It's been very, very useful, very, very good information. And it's always great when Microsoft and anyone really can be so honest and forthcoming with great information about the different parts of the components. So I know everybody's taking advantage of that. And of course, you have a Twitter account as well. I believe it's at InTheCloudMSFT for Microsoft. So just yep. InTheCloudMSFT. So that's people can follow you there. Excellent.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, again, Brad, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciated it and really enjoyed this series and talking with you.
Hey, thank you so much.
We'll see you next time on TechNet Radio, What's New in Server 2012 R2.